All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Vindicta. This show is going to be a little bit impromptu. I'm not currently in my studio. So, I'm out at a hotel room in the middle of BFE, Arkansas, and out here with some guys. You may have heard of them. One of them is Mondo from Prophecy Watchers. Another one is a friend of ours, Brent Height from Brent Height Outdoors. That's his YouTube channel you can find on there. And we're out here with Brent, helping him uncover some mysteries that are within this area of Arkansas. And honestly, it's the entire area of Arkansas. But within the area that we are specifically at right now, we are on an archaeological reconnaissance. And I find it to be pretty cool because this area is mainly the older, I guess you could say, the older society of the First Nations people, the mound builders. And there's a lot of lore, a lot of history, and a lot of walking through pretty, you know, I guess you say, pretty nasty terrain, just to get to some of these areas where we can find artifacts, where we can have some sort of a scientific research being done. And Mondo is taking care of the archaeology side. And I'll tell you one thing that's pretty cool. I just found out about this, but Mondo also is a part of something that is called astroarchaeology. And what that does is they use the stars and the placement of the stars from thousands of years ago, and they have a unique ability, depending on where the stars aligned at one point in time, to tell you how old something is. And we were at a site the day before yesterday, and it's called the Arkansas Sphinx. So if you look at my YouTube channel, you'll probably already see that I posted something that I'm working on, and it shows a picture of the Arkansas Sphinx. Now, this thing was really hard to get to. We had to climb for about 45 minutes to an hour straight, and I mean at a 25 degree angle straight up. And this mountain was, it was perilous. There were plenty of times where you're on hands and knees climbing, then you're on, you know, feet and hands climbing. And it's a very small little path to get up this mountain. It's not very well maintained. It's not really maintained at all. And out here in this area, we got bear and we have cougar, you know, we got bobcat and all the natural creepy crawlies. But there's also a very deceptive plant that does not help you along this journey. And it's called the devil's walking stick. And as you're climbing up this mountain, you are constantly having to reach out and grab a hold of saplings in order to steady yourself or, you know, be able to brace yourself, get another foothold, and climb further ahead. And I can't tell you how many different times I grabbed the devil's walking stick. Now, the devil's walking stick, about a pill bottle wide. And it's filled full of thorns. So multiple times I had unfortunately grabbed a hold of one of these things and still had to hold on to it, or I would have lost my footing and fell. And that's just our journey on the way up. You know, we got covered in ticks. There was mosquitoes everywhere. Brent spooked some sort of a critter that jumped out at him. We don't know what it was. It could have possibly been a cougar, but it was a hard journey. It was a very, very hard journey. Now, I'm 34. Mondo's, I think he says, 48. Brent's 54, and we're out here climbing up this dang mountain in the heat of the day, 90 degrees. And so if you're going to be out doing stuff like that, I just want you to know, hydrate. Don't just bring water with you and drink on the way up there. Bring water with you and drink before you get there. Be hydrated. Because the last thing you want to do is go down as a heat casualty. You're not dehydrated, or you're dehydrated. Your body starts to cramp up. You start to vomit because you're feeling sick now because of the dehydration. And that's one of those areas that can put you in a lot of hurt. And I mean a lot of hurt. Because where we were at was, there was nobody around us. If you fail, no one's coming to get you. If you passed out, no one's coming to find you. So, you know, another part of this is if you go on one of these little journeys where you're out in the middle of the wilderness around nobody, make sure you at least tell somebody where you're going. Show them on a map. Drop a pin location on your Google Maps and send it to somebody. That way somebody else can come out there and find where you're at. So, sorry for the yawn. I just got up. This is day 3 of our journey. And we've been going through caves. We've been walking on mounds. And it's really strange within the Delta area of Arkansas. There are remnants of hundreds of mounds everywhere you would not expect them to be. And you can see where modern industrial farming, sadly, has completely destroyed a large remainder of the mounds that were left over from the mound builder First Nations people. And, you know, we get plenty of interesting artifacts out of these mounds. And, you know, between the clay pottery, the arrowhead, the spear point, you know, that's kind of your average stuff. One of the gentlemen that was with us yesterday, and we have videos of all this, and I'm going to be downloading and editing all of it. So hopefully by this week it'll be up on the YouTube channel for you to watch our little adventure. But one of the gentlemen that's with us, Brent Height, his cousin was out there with us showing us different areas of mounds that he frequents. And we got into some deep bush backcountry. And this is what we found that I find to be interesting, all right? And this is what I find to be interesting, is I have a device with me called a trifield meter. And this trifield meter is going to pick up milligauss, background radiation, magnetism, electric fields to an extent. And some people get the whole trifield meter wrong because trifield meters are used quite frequently with the ghost hunting crew. We were not out there ghost hunting. So the reason why we had this instrument was to be able to measure if there's any anomalies happening within this area. This device should help assist us in our investigation because this is, you know, more or less an archaeological style investigation. Now, I'm not an archaeologist. That's Mondo's department and Brent's department. I could just do the investigation part on my own. So while I'm out there with this trifold meter, I'm walking the grounds. And the first place I went to, or the first place we went to with the mounds were almost shaped similar to the star Orion. So the constellation Orion, which is a common theme throughout different parts of the world for some of these very large megaliths. And we're on this mound, and we're like, oh man, it's already shaped in the constellation of Orion. But if it lines up with Orion from the night sky, because more or less the way this goes is, you have the constellation in the sky, and you'll have a mirror image on the ground, and they should line up. Well, this place that we were at, it had the three stars that, or it had three mounds to represent the three stars of Orion, as you're looking at it. But it was not orientated the right way. So Orion is, you know, north-south, this is east-west. So we're like, okay, well, that's kind of a bust. That's kind of a bum. Because if it was orientated the right way, man, that's we're really on to something. But I'm walking around with this tri-field meter, and I'm getting no readings. 0.0 readings on the milligauss, on the voltage, on radio frequencies. I'm not picking up anything anywhere that I go. And there's power lines probably within less than a quarter of a mile from us, and we're not picking up anything. And so, okay, that's a bust. You know, the instrument works, but I didn't find anything extracurricular. So we go to another location, and on this other location, it's way back into the marsh and swamp area, and the freaking mosquitoes were horrible. But this was another location. It's behind a bunch of houses in between kind of like a small housing area and then this area called Village Creek and then a marsh. And so we're out there, and his cousin was telling us a story when he was 10 years old. He remembers his older brothers, they were out there arrowhead hunting, and they found within this old burial mound area where they would go arrowhead hunting and artifact hunting, they found a 7-foot skeleton. Now, for many of you who follow many of the men within, you know, the movement, between the Steve Quells, the Tim Alberinos, and Tom Horns, L.A. Marzullis, you'll know that when we are around Native American mounds and we hear anything 7 foot or taller, it's going to spike the interest on the radar. And it should. Giants within the land, right? We know that the Native Americans were not tall people, but occasionally you get a 7-footer. Occasionally you get a 7.5-footer. Why that's not considered to be too abnormal or too spectacular is simply because even within our own people right now, you know, every 100,000 people, we're going to have a 7-foot person. We're going to have an NBA-sized figure out there. So could it be anything more than what it was, just an extraordinarily tall person, especially for the Native Americans? Maybe. Could it have been something more? I don't know. The problem with this is that this has taken place probably close to 40 years ago. And the witness, because I'm the one who's out there mostly gathering witness statements, and we have more witness statements to gather today for more stuff. But the witness statement that we got for this is, you know, it's just a recollection of memory. So there's no other people out there. The older brothers and the friends and cousins that were joining in on this big arrowhead hunt are passed on. So we can't, obviously, investigate further with this. But the one witness that we have is pretty credible. You know, this guy is has a treasure trove of different type of spear points and arrowheads. And, you know, these, like Brent himself, these men are very knowledgeable for what they're doing, especially within the caving community as well. So, you know, it's a chance for me to go out there and be a sponge and soak up information and learn. But my specialty comes in here and there. And I want to tell you this. This is where I find this to be interesting. The same area where this 7-foot skeleton is reportedly found. I use the trifold meter and I walk the perimeter of where this field is that we don't have permission to dig on, but we have permission to be at because we don't go out, you know, trespassing on people's property. So we do know the private landowner. So I'm walking the perimeter and I'm using the trifold meter and I start getting strange spikes within the milligauss readings. Now, the EPA will tell you that with milligauss readings, and that's hitting levels of microwave energy. This reading from the EPA should be between a 0.5 and a 2.5 reading. Once you start to go above 2.5, it's recommended to leave the area or to get out of that area because they deem it to be unsafe above a 2.5 reading. Now, that 2.5 reading is something that would be, I guess you could say, it would be common to see that type of a reading in your home, near your TV, near your computer, near your Wi-Fi router, more especially near your microwave. Your microwave puts off 25 milligauss readings. So if EPA says between 0.5 and 2.5 is the safe zone and your microwave puts off 25 milligauss, then why is it that in the middle of the field, nowhere near civilization, where we are finding prehistoric, to an extent, artifacts, did I start to get spikes of 2.4, then a 2.6, then a 2.7? And I probably hit between a 1 and a 1.9 milligauss reading close to 20 times in the middle of a field where deer were just bedding down at. There's no houses, there's no telephone poles, there's no electric company anywhere around there working. So that's very anomalous. I'm not going to say what I think it is because I don't know. I'm just recording data, which is my innocent version of telling you that I'm not hyping up anything. There's a lot of shock jocks out there within the ghost hunting areas. And these guys will get any reading that they get, and you know it's whatever they want to say. And you, as the audience, can't say anything because you don't know how to use the meter. Because I was that person until I bought one. It does pick up magnetic anomalies, according to the ghost hunting community and society, the paranormal society. The tri-field meters can pick up residual energy. Now, Doug's not out there looking for residual energy. I'm not communicating with ghosts and spirits because I don't believe in half that stuff. Most of that is demonic, if not all of it. So, once again, we're out there mainly to take soil samples, to see what artifacts are there, to look at an area that was previously excavated for a skeleton, which we have no idea where the skeleton went. And I just find it funny, as I'm randomly walking through this field, I'm getting milligauss readings of 2 points to 2.7, almost a 3. What's making that spike? Because this instrument can move on its own if you walk too fast, if you shake it. So I already know how to vet certain readings that I'm getting. And typically what I'll do is if it starts to spike, I'll stop. I'll put the device on the ground. And I'll just let it equal itself out and find a baseline. Well, we did this a couple times. And even Mondo repeated it. And we were still getting, we didn't get the twos again. But in another area, we were still getting high milligauss readings of 1.8. But what is producing a magnetic field underneath the dirt in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas? What type of electric fields are out there? What type of magnetism or magnetic anomalies could there possibly be out there in the middle of this ground? Well, let me just tell you my train of thought. My train of thought for this is that the ancient people that used to be here from the First Nations, the mound builders are some of the most mysterious of all of them. We know very little of their society, of their population. We know that they were all over this area. There's mounds everywhere. And there's very strange cave markings everywhere. That some of the cave markings, based off of some of the other archaeological digs that we've researched, look very similar to other portions of European societies. Now, this could just be, you know, misconception. It could just be similarities, and there's nothing wrong if it's just a similarity, and we're not saying that they are or they aren't anything. We're just saying that, you know, this is the data that we're getting. These are the similarities. However, out there in the middle of the field in nowhere, Arkansas, we're picking up magnetic anomalies. We even got to one point because the trifold meter also measures the electric field and the voltage, and it's standing in the very center of the field, where there's a small circled patch of area where deer were laying down, I hit 1 volt twice. And that's with me not holding the device and it's laying on the ground. And I just have to sit there and I have to ask myself, okay, what is producing a magnetic field, producing these magnetic anomalies? And then what is it that is causing a volt to hit out of nowhere in this device in the middle of a field? So here's the train of thought. These ancient people, did they have technology that we're not aware of? Is it within this area? Are there large masses of potential metal that is found? Because this device will pick up on a large mass of metal. If you look into the ancient aliens people that are on History Channel, which I'm not exactly a fan of, I don't think very many people are. It's entertaining, but it's a lot of it's just craziness. One of the things that they do talk about that is, you know, something within the society that does these type of investigations and archaeological digs, one of the things that I think a lot of people agree on is that the ancient people had a technology that disappeared. It went somewhere, and we believe that many of it is possibly hidden underneath the ground. So we were hoping that we'd be able to excavate this area, because if we could find something underneath this ground that was showing us that it was producing these magnetic anomalies, that would have been very fun. Just like with Skinwalker Ranch, there are many of the guys that will use these same devices, these trifold meters, from Skinwalker Ranch, and they'll get milligauss reading spikes that are very dangerous with the amount of background radiation, microwave radiation. And then they'll get very strange readings, and it's kind of the inspiration as to why I decided to do it, because, we're not out here trying to prove ghosts and demons. We're out here just trying to see what kind of readings there are. So in certain areas already, we're finding anomalies. I don't know very much else about the area. I don't know if anything else has been seen within the area. But we do know that, the potentiality is there. This was a ancient race of people. There was a giant that was found there. Let's just say, let's just use that blanketed statement, a giant 7-footer that was found there. So if this is a burial mound and these are the giant society, based off the information that we do know, gathered and do know, did they have instruments that were buried with them? Did the native people have other devices potentially that came from a fallen race of people? Did they have it there within this location? We don't know, because we weren't allowed to dig. Now, on our way out of there, Brent flew his drone, so we're doing surveys with the drone. And on the way out of there, we were able to communicate with the landowner, who said, you can excavate there with an actual excavator. So we can bring a backhoe in there and we can start digging, but he's got to be there for it. So we're going to have to line up another trip. Because today's Monday, Mondo unfortunately has to leave today to go back to work. So, and I leave tomorrow. So, we can only do what we can while we're here. But we have that on our list. We're going to go and hit that site again, and we're going to see if we can't reproduce magnetic anomalies again. The part of being very scientific about this, especially with me, is that I want to try to recreate and replicate any type of data that I'm getting. So if I'm getting strange readings on this meter, what I ended up doing was handing it over to Mondo. And I said, Mondo, get out there and walk the same path I just did. Let's see if you get the same readings. And, I want to try and debunk myself as quickly as possible. That would be very beneficial to me, because, hey, if I got weird spikes, then it might have just been me. But when Mondo walks out there and now we're getting these irregular spikes within the trifold meter, now we have to sit there and go, okay, what's making this? So we stepped off probably about 100 feet away into the forested area near the creek, because this is a big cleared area that we're walking in. And before we left, I said, guys, I want to go take another set of readings. And sure enough, just as I thought, as I'm walking beside this wood line, I'm getting nothing. The baseline is a 0.1 to maybe 0.2, 0.3. And it is strange because you can never get a solid hit on the baseline. In the first area that we went to, where the first mounds were, the baseline was a 0.0 to a 0.1. And it was very consistent with that. But in this area, if you were within the area of this mound, and there's no pipelines running through it, there's no buried electrical lines, you know, we're talking about out in the middle of the freaking swamp, swamp area. As you got closer to the wood line that is closer to the field, the meter would start picking up on more energy, on more of the electric field. And so, you know, we'd walk the tree line and get very little, but we would turn and start heading toward that field, and it would start spiking. So once again, just more data for us to sit here and crunch numbers and, you know, try and make something of all this. So this is what's fun, guys. This is the type of stuff that I, you know, always wanted to be an Indiana Jones researcher. I want to go out into the field, and I'm finally getting the chance to do it. I spent 14 years of my career carrying a gun for the government, and now I'm finally getting to do what I want. So I hope that this little story I just gave you is kind of like an encouragement. Hey, get out there and have an adventure, guys. You know, there's all different types of stuff. I never knew about the Arkansas Sphinx, and the pictures that I'll be posting, it's going to be on my Patreon page. The other parts of this will eventually be on a YouTube video. And it's truly amazing. We hit this Arkansas Sphinx. I don't think there's a recording of anyone doing this, but I brought a very high powerful UV light, and we hit that sucker at night with the UV light, and man, the pictures are unreal. The head of the Sphinx at one area, as you angle the light, almost looks like teeth that are carved into the head of the Sphinx. Could be, you know, just my eyes, but me and Mondo, who's a trained archaeologist, both saw the same thing. So this was great. It's been a lot of fun. We got a lot of caverns and stuff to go into today. We've just been hitting the road all day, you know, kicking our butts back and forth. But, you know, this is a cool thing to be able to fellowship with people and to have fun exploring God's world. And, you know, there's all different types of little mysteries out there. And I think we waste our time on our phones. We waste our time on the internet and, you know, and just sitting in front of screens. And the real adventure is outside that front door. So just consider that. I'm going to go to a break, and we're going to be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Okay, so for the sake of brevity, because I got to get all my gear ready, change over some batteries, get downstairs in the hotel lobby, and I got to eat, and we got to go get ready to go do a bunch of stuff today. I'm going to play you a recording from last night, which was the Doug and Dave Intel Report. You'll be able to view the Doug and Dave Intel Report on Dave Hodges' show, The Common Sense Show. And our show will either tend to be on the podcast side, so you can also find that on his show, on The Common Sense Show. But you can also find it like this episode, which is a recording from the TV show. So if you want to be able to see my pretty face and you know, watch me and Dave have their conversations back and forth, it tends to be pretty interesting and fun, you can go to thecommonsenseshow.tv. It's about $2.99 a month, you know, less than a cup of coffee. And he has all different types of really good interviews on there. So please check that out. Show Dave Hodges some love. And without further ado, here's the interview.
Dave Hodges here on the Doug and Dave Intel Report, brought to you by the CommonSenseShow.tv. And we are really glad to be with you. We're going to kind of jump around a little bit tonight with our guest, Doug Thornton. And he's not really our guest. It's our broadcast team. We're going to talk about a little bit about what I'm doing health-wise at my advanced age in my 60s. Oh, my gosh. And then we're going to look at a little bit more at the mass shootings that continue to happen and what they're going to do to us with gun control, which none of us are going to follow their rules. And we're going to talk about something called the Mound Builders. It's a fascinating topic. It's kind of the first cousin to pyramids, and it's one of my favorite topics. So, Doug, good to have you here. You can see Doug is kind of out of his element here. I'm in studio. Doug's on remote because he's doing real research. Yeah, that's right, on the Mound Builders. Pretty fascinating stuff. So, Doug, you said you wanted me to talk about a little bit about what I'm doing.
Yeah, let's talk about what you're doing currently for your health. The health standpoint, you know, we talk about guns, we talk about gear, we talk about prepping, and we talk about prayer life, which were all very prominent things. But another big portion of that is staying healthy. And what is it that we do to keep our bodies healthy? Not only does physical health help to promote a healthy immune system, but it also helps to promote a healthy mindset.
Absolutely.
You know, you get bogged down in the marsh with really, you know, bad nonsense of the politics and then all this other really horrible stuff that's happening. But we have to make sure that we're always keeping the ticker, the heart, running nice and pure. And that means we need to be doing a lot of cardiovascular work. I'm a strength athlete. I've always been a strength athlete. I've done powerlifting and other types of competitions that involve strength for a very long time. Was, you know, successful at it to the extent. But, you know, even now I'm 34 and, you know, I realize even at my size, you know, 6 foot, I'm 290, that I need to focus quite a bit on cardiovascular. And I've been this weight, this size, since I've probably been 24. I've maintained a very healthy standard in body weight. And over the years of being in federal law enforcement, you know, you have to do physical fitness battery tests. And one of those is having to be judged upon your mile and a half. And that mile and a half time, that standard changes for the sexes and it changes for the age groups, not the weight, but the age groups. So for, you know, someone my size, having to keep up with guys that are typically, you know, 100 pounds less than me, I have to be able to be moving for that time, which I have always worked on my speed and my endurance, but it's been lacking lately. I'll admit it. You know, we all get a little sloppy every now and then, but just to make me feel bad, Dave Hodges works his butt off in the Arizona heat, pushing a sled. And the sled that Dave uses, and we'll let Dave talk about it, but the sled is one of the probably the better choices for lower body locomotion and hitting different endurance portions for that cardiovascular challenge that we need to constantly be pushing ourselves, that body that, you know, stays in motion, remains in motion. And I think Dave is a living testament to that, because Dave, you know, me and you, every time we do one of these broadcasts, you know, several times a week, what's one of the funniest things that we talk about past midnight? We got to go work out. You know, we have an entire day to go work out. We choose to do it in right there in the midnight hour. But yeah. I'm highly impressed by your work ethic. And I think the things that you do for your physical fitness level of health right now, it's impressive for someone who is, you know, I guess you could say healthy within their years. Most men, if you look at most men, once they start to hit their mid-30s, like me, they really start to drop off. They get lazy and the body changes aggressively sometimes. And it really can be a one of the final nails in the coffin by not taking care of your health. And if you're not taking care of your health and you're smoking and you're drinking, you're eating bad food and you're not staying in motion, you're sitting on your butt all day playing video games, you're going to die early, most likely. You know, that's just a sad fact of life.
Well, that's true.
So I find it as a good time right now for us to kind of break up a little bit of the monotony of the carnage in the air. And let's talk about physical fitness. So what is it that you've been doing? What's your regimen?
Well, let me back up a little bit, because I think history is important here, because I was born with life-threatening asthma. The doctors told my mom, your son won't live to be 10. And by the time I was 7 or 8, I was good enough to play Little League baseball. By the time I was 10, I was playing basketball every day. And it's the prayers of my grandmother and my mom that I think had a lot to do with it. And I effectively outgrew it. Now in my later years, it came back, and it can be on the severe side because it's allergy induced. Exercise, not too bad. But that was part of it. I went on to play, you know, I played high school basketball, football, and baseball, and did pretty well in two of the three and had scholarship offers in both. And then I went on to play basketball in college, coached in high school and college, football and basketball, at least the basketball in college. And I stayed active until I was in my late 40s. I was still with my players in the off season. I would work out with them, and I could still keep up with them when I was about 48. And then the injury started, and then someone named John McCain entered my life and tried to steal my property. I started working 20-hour days and stopped working out. And I gained maybe like about 5-10 pounds a year. Pretty soon I'm 60 pounds overweight. And I'm thinking, oh, well, I don't like the way this is going. So I ended up with a borderline type 2 diabetes, and I have to manage that. And then the asthma started coming back, and I said, I got to do something. I certainly don't have the lung capacity I used to. So a couple of years ago, I really got serious about working out. Now, I'm in my late 60s, so, you know, it's hard to restart the motor, you know, on an old engine like mine, but I've done fairly well. I've lost about 35 pounds. I got about 25 more to go. But the thing that I'm really pleased with is I work out 6 times a week, and I work out to exhaustion. And sometimes I do it twice a day till exhaustion. And the diabetes is completely manageable. I'm now in what they call the pre-diabetic stage, come down, and they greatly reduce my medication. The asthma, you know, it's good as long as the air I'm in is healthy. But I've started, I just go through my routine real quick. And the point is, if I can do this and start to have significant weight loss and improve my health, you can too. And you say, well, I'm in for, you can walk. But, you know, I couldn't have done sledding like I'm doing now a year ago. Now I'm doing anywhere between 4 to 6 sets up, back, which is a little longer than the length of a basketball court. I use my driveway where I have a basketball court, and I have a slight incline. So I even get higher work. I work out on the highest setting on the sled, and you push it and you pull it. And it's a rehab thing for your knees and ankles, but it's also, the cardio is incredible. You go a little over a minute, which is high intensity training, And then you try to come back in a minute, and I have to be honest, I'm not there yet. I take about a minute 20, minute 30 before I'm ready to go again. And when I'm done, and I may just do 5-6 sets, when I'm done, I'm ready to collapse. But I also have a regimen where I lift upper body one day, take a day off, lift lower body, take a day off, and then I'm swimming 5 days a week, anywhere between a quarter to a half a mile, depending on how much time I have available. And so that's pretty much my routine. A lot of people guess me to be 20 years younger than I am. That happens all the time. They weren't saying that 3 years ago. And I still, like I said, have major improvements I think I got to make. But, you know, even my doctor has said, he says, you probably have put 10 years back on your life. But see, I'm living a good quality of life now. I do certain kinds of stretching, so I can actually squat. Now, I couldn't half squat 3 years ago. And now I can full body weight squat and get my butt on the back of my calf. And that's pretty amazing for someone my age, but I've worked at it and I work at it hard. And sometimes I have to grab something to get balance for assistance, but I can still do it. And what I'm saying is you can do the same thing. And I mean that sincerely. Now, yeah, I was a good athlete when I was young, but being really athletic when you're 20 has very little to do with trying to rehab an aging, overweight body that's diseased when you're in your 60s. That has the very little correlation between the two. And I'm actually now probably about a month away from being able to play basketball again twice a week. I'm not going to do more than that because I got bone on bone on my knee with the cartilage. And but by the way, the sledding, if you go to a gym and they have a sled, you should be doing the sled. And the thing that'll rehab your joints, like your hips and your knees, is to pull backwards. So I go forward once, go backwards once, and then I do some other exercises with it. But that really rehabs the legs. So yeah, Doug wanted me to talk about this. I'm not trying to brag, but I am proud of the gains I've made. And I hear it from a lot of people. And it's kind of funny. I sometimes run into old players that are in their 40s and 50s that I used to coach, and I look better than a lot of them. So it's pretty cool. Anyway, Doug, that's pretty much it. I don't want to talk about myself any more than that, except I would tell people, if you're like really obese, then you just start walking. Just walk and try to get a couple thousand steps a day. Get one of these kinds of watches here and then build up. Walk a little more and a little more, and then start doing some body weight exercises. Like you can do push-ups against the wall. You know, you could get on your knees and do push-ups. You can do squats as far as you can and hold yourself up, and just start doing stuff. And then you could add in some strength training. And I will tell you, one of the biggest predictors of slowing down the aging process is strength training with weights. High intensity interval training is probably number one. Number two is strength training in terms of strengthening joints, muscles, getting the cardiovascular system going. Because when people get old and their joints get weak, they fall, and that's usually the beginning of the end for a lot of elderly people. So strength training, high-intensity interval training once you're ready to do that. But until then, just start moving.
And another thing that I would add into that, and, you know, some people – are nervous with what I'm about to say, but I want people to know that it is a very kind, comforting, and camaraderie-driven group of people. But get into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, get into boxing, get into some form of a martial art that is an actually defensive and offensive methodology, because what we want is not only is it going to benefit you physically, but if you ever get into a physical altercation with somebody, and I'll give you an example. In law enforcement, we have something that we call fight for life. And the fight for life exercise is brutal if you're brutal at it. And by that, I mean, if you want to be in shape and you kick your butt in the gym, you will get a positive outcome out of it. If you want to go to a gym and, you know, play with some 5-pound weights and use a cable machine here and there and talk to people, you're wasting your time. So when you go into the gym or when you have a trainer, give it 110% every single time. Be a sponge, soak up as much information as you can. But I always stress to people is to get into grappling, and strictly for the fact, Dave, you never know when tomorrow you go to the store and then you have the one guy that you have to fall down to the ground and fight. And let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been in a fight with somebody and it goes to the ground and they want to fight you, you're going to have to fight them back or let them win. And in a real life fight, that means you're going to be robbed, you could be kidnapped, or you could be murdered. So if you have the ability to fight on the ground with somebody, that's not just strength. It's all here in the heart. It is such a cardiovascular workout to grapple. That's why these guys that fight in mixed martial arts are such phenomenal athletes, because of the amount of endurance it takes to push somebody constantly off of your person who's trying to dominate on top of you. And, you know, if you have that bad guy out in the middle of a, you know, the dark alley, and you're trying to fight to get back into your car, you want to engage that person and dominate and disengage as quickly as possible, recover and get away, right? So one of the main ways that you would do that is working on your cardiovascular workouts. That's making sure that your lungs and your heart are being taken care of. And Dave, the sled is one of the best ways you can do it. One of the other best ways you can do it, something as simple as jump rope. Jump roping is something that I like to do. It's very forgiving on the joints. And I mean, when you're doing 2 or 3 minutes straight of it, trying to hit 100 reps, 200 reps, even if you mess up, keep going. Who cares? It's your workout. It's about your body. The other thing that I like to do is heavy bag training. There's nothing wrong with getting on a heavy bag and seeing how hard you can sling that sucker. But if you stay on it and you work on it constantly, it will work you over. So, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up is physical fitness is not just about looking good. It's also about feeling good. And that's a good mental health reprieve. And right now in this time of age, we have so many bad things coming out past COVID now. People are going through depression. And one of the best stress reliefs is not alcohol. It's not smoking. It's not pornography. It's not, you know, hanging out and howling at the moon at the bars. I think one of the healthiest things you can do, going on hikes, getting in the gym, you know, sweating and working out, you know, going for a good swim, Dave. These are things that helps to prolong our body, our spirit, our mind, and it may just save your life one day.
Yeah, it is. You know, I do heavy. I forgot. I left that out. I do heavy bag work too. When I finish my lifting at night, I go out and I do a couple of rounds, 2 minutes each, just combos for a while. And then I'll do 3 sets of how many punches I can throw in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I got a little tracking device that measures. It ain't very good. My speed's not bad. My speed's pretty good still. It's probably about 80% of what I used to do. I did martial arts for years. I was third degree black belt. But on the punching power, Doug, this is where your ego has to take a back seat, because I used to be able to punch about 600 pounds. And on a good day, I'll do 380, 400 on a good day now. So, I've lost a third of what I had. I work out. I take these little 5-pound dumbbells, and I train with them, try to get my punching power up. But even that, it kind of is what it is. You know, it's just you age for a reason. I'm on a one-way trip to you know where, but I'm trying to slow down the express.
Well, what? One of the things I like to do for training, especially for the younger guys that are out there, those of us who are still within combative age, and you, if you train with gear, by gear, I mean, if you have a gun belt and a plate carrier and you want to train for your tactical proficiency with firearms, give this a try. Wear your gear and then go through a heavy bag routine. It changes your body posture. You're now going to have a restriction on the hips because of a gun belt and a gun adding weight along with magazines. You're going to have a restriction on your torso and how you're going to torque your body and move. So you actually have to relearn almost how to strike properly and how to move back and forth properly. And if you're not training in your gear, you're wrong. Because if you plan on employing your gear for this hypothetical situation, hypothetical, of a civil war,
Many guys with my experience would tell you that in war, Dave, you have about 5% of using your gun, about 90% of walking and running and using your eyes. And the other part, you know, is another 5% of just, you know, whatever happens, happens. But if you're not in shape to get to the fight, you'll probably die before you get to the fight. And by the time you get to the fight, if you're not in shape, then you're going to be more of a detriment to yourself and others, just like with active shooters. If we're in the chance where, you know, me and you are walking through, let's say Home Depot, the active shooter starts. One of the more important keys of what we train people with active shooter is run, hide, and fight. If you cannot run because you did not take care of your body, then you may fall victim of someone who could not outrun the shooter. Now, once again, plain line of sight, you cannot run a bullet. Let's be honest. But if you have the ability to fight the shooter, it's better to be in shape and fight the shooter. If anything, it's better just to fight the shooter if you have the chance. But if you are within a certain distance and you need to run, you need to have that ability within you. It's one of these God-given things where you know, the Lord gave us such an amazing body to be able to sprint instantly, to be able to overpower somebody. So that is a tool and a weapon within itself God has given you. You might want to sharpen the iron occasionally and get in the dang gym and get in shape. I think it's one of the grossest things that when you look at the stats, Dave, that America is the fattest nation in the world, the most out of shape nation in the world. As an American, I take offense to that because we have the most, what should be, healthiest population of people in the world because we're a first world nation. We have the healthiest food available to us, the most amount of vitamins that you don't have to get a prescription like in Europe just to have vitamins. And you have 24/7 access to gyms and you don't live in a war zone. You don't have an excuse at this point in time why you don't walk into the iron circle, why you don't get into shape. And, you know, I think it's we're coming up to a point in time, Dave, where with the active shooter scenario, you may find yourself one day involved in some sort of a conflict that you need to get up and move. And if you haven't been practicing sprinting, jogging, stretching is a huge portion. You know that, Dave, stretching is a big portion of that. If you haven't put yourself in shape and you find yourself in that deadly situation, you only have a couple of choices. So why not have the ace up your sleeve and already be in shape and ready for it? I'll give you this as well. Being in shape also helps you to keep your mind under control. When you get into a state of panic, like what I was talking about a while ago with the fight for life that officers do, this training course, 3 minutes straight of fighting. If you've never fought for 3 minutes straight, and we fight multiple instructors at one time with guns on us, training guns, but one of the things that we do is we have a kickboxing bag or a heavy bag, and it's 1 minute straight of knee strikes, elbow strikes, and you know, hand-to-hand strikes. 1 minute straight, and then it's 1 minute straight of burpees, which will knock you out.
That's as bad as a sled.
It is. And then it's 1 minute straight of fighting somebody who's completely fresh on top of you, who takes you down to the ground and you have to fight them off. And you're in that state that we call being gassed. What we're really trying to train is we're trying to train people's minds that you can control your mind and your body by controlling your respiratory system and your breathing and thinking through a situation. If you are gassed and you're not breathing, you're not thinking through a situation, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have a heightened elevation of possibly being frightened or scared and not doing what you should be with fighting back. That's why we train officers to a certain standard when it comes to this fight for life. And I can show you, Dave, video after video of officers fighting on the ground with a suspect for more than 3 minutes with guns in play, with knives in play, with cars zipping by at 80 miles an hour, not stopping the officer to help. Sometimes you're on your own. And understand that, people. Until police arrive, you are your own first responder. No one is coming to help you. Help yourself at least be in shape right there at the beginning. That's one of the best things that you can have. That's some of the best medicine that you can have for any type of a tactical situation like that, a deadly exchange with somebody else, is already being in shape. You're beating them to the punch by being in shape.
Well, one of the things that people need to think about doing too, I did this, our dojo did this when I was a teenager and into my 20s. We would do community service as part of our membership. And we would go out to like church groups or women's groups, and we teach self-defense techniques. And it wasn't, you know, high block, counter. It wasn't, you know, jab, elbow, sweep, kick. It wasn't anything like that. It was like how to carry your keys when you're walking to the car. So they come up and grab you. If they grab you like this underneath to the throat, if they grab you in a different way, you go right to the eyes and you go, well, you could kill somebody. Well, what do you think they're trying to do to you?
Yes.
So we used to teach these really lethal situations. And we'd talk about, you know, things like look under your car. So if you're a member of an organization, call a dojo and ask if they do some community service and come out and train you in some basic self-defense. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, first of all, an attacker walks up, particularly on a woman, they're not going to expect what they get. Mm-hmm. If a woman knows what she's doing, and you don't have to be really skilled. It's just like my favorite is this. The keys interlace in the fingers. And you just walk that way and they come up and you have to see where their hands are at. It's just a simple matter of making the read. And then you go for it. It's either throat or eyes. You know, you can kick to the groin, although unless you're pretty good at it, I don't recommend that because you get knocked down pretty easy. But so, Doug, that's one thing people need to be thinking about. Here's why we thought it was important to bring this up. Everybody right now needs to work on their physical conditioning because there's four organizations that were meeting over the last week: the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, the World Government Summit, and the Bilderberg. And I went through, and they actually publish a lot of what they do. And one of the things that they're all talking about is continuity of government. Now, this isn't just the U.S. It's a U.S. concept that started in the 50s under Eisenhower. And it's a mainstay of what we do here. But they're talking about this for the globe. So what they're planning to do to us is going to put us in a state of hyper emergency. And continuity of government means martial law. They make the rules and they enforce the rules. There are no courts. There are no appeals. You get no defense attorney. It's really almost a kill or be killed. And I think it's going to be the civil unrest coming from lack of resources, drinkable water. Food will probably be number one. But you've got to think about getting your body and mind in better shape, because the tough times are coming, and these four organizations just told us this over the last week.
To climb out of it, you need to take that ability and climb out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we had to cut it right there. Like I said, get out, get off your excuse, get out there and have fun, enjoy your life, go on an adventure, take your kids, you know, take your wife and your husband out there with you. Don't do this by yourself. Enjoy fellowshipping with people. We don't have that much time on this world. We never know when we could depart. So enjoy your life while you got it. Be safe. Be careful. Be courageous. Go out there. Be a great ambassador for the kingdom of heaven. I love you all. Thank you very much for listening to me and all my crazy stories I'm getting into now. You listen to the American Victor Show.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.